Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Underbox podcast, the television show podcast on the Amfoot Index podcast channel. And we're back again this week with the regular crew. Now, it's getting pretty regular now, of Mr. Joseph Connors, who are lovingly called Joey. Namaste, Joey. I'm going to beat you to it this time, mate.
Yeah, namaste, guys. How are you?
I'm good, dude. How are you?
I'm good.
And also, Mike Williams. How are you doing, Mike? You okay?
Hello, yes. Good to be back again.
Back again. You're regular now. There's no point in being like a newbie no more. You know? When you first started talking to you, I'm not sure about podcasts, mate. Yeah, I did one ages ago. Okay, I'm on every week. Fuck it. What are we here to talk about?
We're actually in one house, just in different rooms.
So. We live together now as well. No, basically, what are we talking about? We're going back, you know, back into the past for this one. One of the biggest shows ever, possibly the most successful show ever. And I'll tell you why in a minute. But we're going to talk about Friends. Everybody has seen Friends. Surely everybody.
Well, you think
okay,
so?
Our age. Sure. If you're in your 30s or above, you've seen Friends. And if you haven't, then you're probably seeing reruns of it, syndicated versions of it. Everywhere, it's on all the fucking time. You go through the channels, Friends is on. You know, they just repeat every single episode. You know, it takes how many episodes were the guys in the end?
Ooh.
236 days covered in a year. That's all right, yeah, for content, not bad. And if you do it for just midweek days, that's the whole year sorted, pretty much. So, yeah, there's plenty of content for these guys, and let's talk about it. Absolutely no point in doing any spoiler-friendly shit, because most of the people listening to this right now, if you're listening, you've watched this show. You've watched it. So, let's just open up with some random facts. So, Joey, I'll come to you with one first, and then I'll go into some of the salary stuff that I love to talk about. Numbers.
Okay. So, yeah, you have to have some kind of numbers on this pod. So, you guys just stop me when I start rambling too much and somebody else wants to go. But my first one is, this show was actually originally called Insomnia Cafe. Friends was a title
that... I did not know that! Wow!
Me neither.
Yeah, it was Friends, what it was actually called, Friends, was actually like the 20th title they came up with. So they couldn't agree on one, so they finally just said, well, there's six friends living in New York City. Oh, let's call it Friends. The actual role for David Schwimmer as Ross was actually written just for him, so nobody else had to prepare for it. It was written for him, which is crazy. The opening credits, everybody thinks that's shot at Central Park or Gramercy Park, which is New York City. well, friends, I'm here to tell you it's not. That was actually shot in a Warner Brothers studio. If you've ever been in New York City, there are things in the opening credits that you see and you go, that's not part of it. That's not part of it. But people who are not from America or who don't know New York City very well would not know that. The cast went on a Vegas trip before 1994, before this show started. Because people are going to ask, well, why would they go to Vegas? What's the point? Because they said when this show started, they thought it was going to be so big that they would never have, basically people would know who they were everywhere they went. So that's why they did the Vegas trip. I'll keep going if you guys are all right with that.
Yeah, go for it. Give us one more. You must have something interesting. I have a bunch.
They were the first TV cast ever to negotiate as a group.
Ah, see, this is where I was going to come into it, because you were talking about the numbers. Yeah, because basically, I think, after the season one, Ross and Rachel were the highest paid.
Yes.
And I've read this story too, because they both then went to collective bargaining.
Yeah, they did. And they ended up, I know you're going to get into that later. Bruce Willis only appeared on the show after losing a bet to Matthew Perry. And you're going to ask, well, what was that bet? They were in a movie together called The Whole Nine Yards.
Mm. Indeed.
And the bet was, if it was the number one box office in the opening weekend, Willis would have come on for nothing. He didn't want money. And it ended up happening that The Whole Nine Yards opened to the best box office of that weekend. So that is why you saw him on there. And he was, like I said, paid absolutely no fee, which is crazy.
Yeah, he did three episodes, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, he was awesome. I thought he was awesome.
He was awesome.
Matthew Perry struggled with drugs, and everybody thought he struggled through the show. He actually struggled with drugs before that happened.
Yeah, he ballooned in this show, though, didn't he? He went up and down in weight loads.
He did.
And he was very up and down, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was very up and down. So I guess somebody else could go. I have some more, but let me find
it. Okay, so basically, we were talking about what you were talking about there, the collective bargaining. So season one and two. Season one, they were all on $22,500 per episode. Season two, everybody was on $22,500 apart from those two, Ross and Rachel, who went up to $40,000 because it was all around them, really, the main storyline, right? When they went to season three, Ross and Rachel gave up their rights to be highest, you know, the highest paid, and instead went with collective bargaining to give them more power, to give the group more power. So we're all going to get paid the same amount, and they all got $75,000 for season three. So this is from various sources, and it's Business Insider UK that's got the article that I'm reading it from, just in case people want to go check it out. Season 4, they went up to $85,000 each. Season 5, they went up to $100,000 each. Season 6, $125,000 each. They never broke the pact after that. They stayed together. Season 7 and 8, from $125,000. Season 7 and 8, they went to $750,000 each.
Whoa.
Per episode. And season 9 and 10, they went to $1 million each. That's $48 million for the last two seasons. Each. Now you think, you know, that's a lot of money for back then. This is 2003 and 4, right?
Hmm.
Now what are they making? You're wondering what? What do you mean, what are they making now? They're making money still from Friends for doing jack shit. USA Today reports that because of the magic of syndication, Friends pulls in a whopping $1 billion each year for Warner Brothers.
Whoa.
$1 billion, okay? Advertising, everything. They just for the syndication, because it's still powerful, $1 billion. That translates to $20 million each per year for the six of them. They make two. They've got a 2% deal on syndication.
That's amazing.
$20 million a year. That's why you'll probably find a lot of them aren't desperate for movie roles or TV roles and pick and choose what they want to do. You know, and you don't actually get that off them, the vibe that they're desperate in any press or whatever. You never get the story either. They are minted. They don't need to do anything. This one show has made them for life. I mean, that is nuts, right?
That is impressive.
It is. And the funny part about it is that a lot of these actors and actresses who ended up playing the characters were not even first choices. So it was such a lucky thing. Back to facts, if you guys don't mind. Kathy Griffin and Jane Lynch were actually up for the role of Phoebe. They were the first two choices. Both turned it down. John Favreau and John Cryer both tried out for the role of Chandler, missed it, but both were first two choices. So it just goes to show you, sometimes the business is just such a luck thing sometimes. Because, I mean, Jennifer Aniston wasn't really big before that. David Schwimmer wasn't.
None of them were, man.
Not if any of them were they? I don't recall any of them.
Maybe Courtney Cox was, because she was in a video. I can't remember what video it was, but she was kind of known at the time.
No.
But yeah, nothing like, you know, what you would see now. The average Friends episode, how long do you think that took to film one episode?
No idea.
22 minutes in an episode.
I'll let you guess. Go ahead.
Couple of days?
3 days?
5 hours.
Wow, that's great. That is great.
5 hours to film one episode on average, which is amazing when you think about it.
But they didn't have to really do too much acting, right? It was more fun, be themselves kind of thing, I think.
Correct. I agree.
I really think some of their... I suppose Joey was not really who he was. You know, Joey is a total loon. And Phoebe to be Phoebe is quite hard, right? To be honest. Because she is just a weird character, which is great. But she's just playing something totally out there, right? But I think Chandler, I think you can see a lot of Matthew Perry in him. David Schwimmer, definitely can see him be a little bit like that. I think actually he has to put a bit on, but, and then Rachel seems herself, that's natural. And Monica as well, it seemed really natural for her as well, to be honest. When you see them in other things, you see similarities, but I think the two that probably had to put on a lot in these two were Joey and Phoebe.
Well, Joey's role was actually not written as like a dimwit character. It was actually Matt LeBlanc that suggested that he wanted to do it, so they changed it at the last second.
He did it brilliantly.
Oh, yeah. He made the right choice.
Yeah, because it just up until even the last episode, you know, the 236th episode, he is playing slow, you know, like he catches things slowly. The naming of the kid, the fact, you know, oh, it's just that there's twins, you know, what's the big news? Stupid things like, it's just so funny. He's just so stupid.
And it was never, like his trait, and wasn't it?
It never got old. It never got old. You laughed at it every single time.
Yeah. He was funny. He played it brilliantly. Yeah. Perfectly.
He was the idiot of the group, wasn't he, really?
It was fantastic.
The Joker. The
so
clown.
Let's do a couple more, Joey, and then let's move on to the rest of the pod.
That's probably all the ones that I wanted to go through, because some of them were kind of cheesy. Some of them were...
Give us one cheesy one. One cheesy one, then.
Like, Marcel was actually played by two monkeys, not just one.
Fantastic. Yeah, we couldn't tell.
Yeah, you would never be able to tell.
No.
Phoebe actually did know how to play guitar, which I know, you know, the Smelly Cat, the famous song, and she always played. Yeah, she knew how to play guitar before the series ever started.
Superb. It's good to bring it in, but then play it badly. It's hilarious.
Exactly. So she knew what she was doing, but she acted it out, which was even more impressive.
Yeah, a lot of fun, man. So let's go on to the main part of the show. So, Mike, how did this show, Friends, change the sitcom landscape?
Well, that's an interesting question. As you say, people in the 30s are going to know Friends and will have been the generation that have grown up with it. But just going back, I mean, I'm like 32, and Friends was started in, was it 93, 94?
94. Yeah, man.
So I was only about 10 or 11 at the time.
Mm.
So watching it as it actually aired, I don't think I actually watched it straight away. Because I was, you're not really sort of switched on at 10 or 11 in terms of TV, film, or really kind of knowing what to what. And I think a lot of the, even a couple of years after that, a lot of the jokes were still going over my head, or you just wouldn't get them because it was American. and you just don't get some American references. Obviously, Joey, you will, but, you know, yeah. From our perspective, yeah. We won't get it. But, I mean, it definitely paved way for this sort of sitcom format. I mean, there was stuff around, like, Frasier. There was Ellen was quite big at the time, and, like, Roseanne. The Roseanne or the Roseanne show?
That was massive, yeah. That was a huge show.
Yeah.
Awful, but it was here.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, I mean, this was... I can't actually really think of any other sitcom or comedy at all that I was watching before this. And this sort of... when it obviously took off, and I was obviously at the right age, early teen, it was just like my life, basically. And I think, obviously, everything that's come back since then, it's paved a way for this other stuff. But even if Friends hadn't happened, something else would have still fitted this formula and sort of been that defining 90s comedy that then obviously made way for stuff like The Big Bang Theory and, you know, that kind of situational episodic comedy.
But this obviously paved the way, right? This is what kind of, I don't know, it inspired so many people in TV. Right? This show, the way they made the characters, the way they interacted, everything, just, I don't think a sitcom like that has gone on to, I don't know, maybe Big Bang Theory is, I mean, that is very popular, massively popular, but like you said, there might have been another one. Which one?
There's nothing else I can think of in my sort of lifetime that has been bigger than Friends. Obviously, sort of the generation before would be like Seinfeld. But yeah, in terms of like growing up sort of mid, late 80s, and then obviously being more aware.
Cheers was thought of highly.
Yeah.
That was
70s, 80s, wasn't that thing,
yeah.
Was it?
Yeah. Yeah. The Simpsons.
I do like Cheers. That's true, yeah, Simpsons.
And if you, I mean, even Modern Family now, which is massive, it doesn't hold a candle, for me anyway, to Friends. And it, again, that's, you know, shows like The Mindy Project and Gags. I know you love Brooklyn Nine-Nine for some odd reason, but you do.
it's funny you say that. I just haven't been able to go back to it, so that tells you something.
Yeah, well, there you go.
I haven't been able to finish it because it's okay, right? It's just something you watch to have a laugh and a joke. It's not nothing. It's not something that's hooked you or something totally special. I don't think it is. I think it's just something that's there to pass time, if you get what I mean.
Yeah.
It's not one of those that's, oh my God, what a show this is.
Yeah, I think the only big one that we're missing from that time period, and this is probably beforehand, would be The Cosby Show. But again, that's a vastly different. That's a vastly different show than what Friends did. So
yeah, Cosby Show was superb. When I was growing up, Cosby Show was another level, man. Absolutely another level. Just
loved it.
Just brilliant. And it's a shame, really, looking back now. But that's tainted. Totally tainted. But let's go with what the show did, as in what we watched, and that was all. High quality, really, really good. It's something that you'd watch again and again and again. And looking back, you just feel sorry for the people that were working with him now. But anyway, moving on to Friends. Joey, anything else you want to add on how it changed the sitcom landscape?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you guys remember this movie. So do you remember Reality Bites that came out same year? Ben Stiller? It was basically Gen Xers and... living the same kind of life, but just not 10 seasons worth of. So that sort of laid the groundwork for Friends, in my opinion. I don't know. Did you have any Reality Bites?
No, not seen that one.
No.
Yeah. See, that's, you guys would probably both really like it. It's from 1994. Ben Stiller's in it. It's basically a bunch of baby adults, you know, like trying to grow up and find their place in the world. Kind of like just how Friends was. Always struggling and trying to get by until you hit that, wherever that time in your life, it gets you moving in the right direction. But that started it. But yeah, nothing before Friends. I mean, it really changed the whole landscape. It, I mean, you're talking about 94. What was that in 94? Like, Family Matters, like Party of Five, stuff like that. That's vastly different. It just changed typical formats of shows. And frankly, NBC almost killed it because they tried to make it like the other shows. And the cast and the writers were just like, wait, you told us we could have basically free reign. This is going to work if you let it. And they had a lot of blowback because remember, a few years earlier, NBC had another huge hit, which Mike, I believe you already said, in Seinfeld. So they were kind of looking at that going, okay, well, this is doing well. Why don't we just kind of copy this? But with, because both shows take place in New York City, you know, so you could copy it, but just put it to a younger generation because there are a bunch of, so they were playing 20 somethings in New York City. Mm. I lived in New York City as a 20 something. I know what that's like. I know how hard that is to live. It's not easy. It's the most expensive city in the world to live. So, you know, it was just different. It was vastly different from everything else. And, you know, the jokes that they got away with in that show, you would not get away with now. A lot of the stuff that they went over, you know, they almost had a 9/11 scene. They had a, it was funny, but it was really ironic. I mean, stuff like that where 9/11 happened. And they actually had an episode where Chandler's gets arrested in the airport for saying bomb. And he just says bomb, 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 bomb. And he's making jokes about bombs and stuff like that. You would never see that then. So yeah, it really just changed the whole entire landscape of it. And for the good, in my opinion.
Mike, any thoughts on, especially that topic there in terms of the jokes getting away with certain things that they used to do and say in this show? Right now, the way the world is, the way social media is, remember social media hadn't really blown up at that point. So,
well, no, I mean, yeah, mid-90s there wasn't really anything, I suppose.
Well, all the way up to 2004, it wasn't really crazy, you know?
I mean, Twitter wasn't even around, was it? I don't think.
No, it wasn't.
In 2004.
No, definitely not.
But, yeah, there was a lot of stuff that, I don't know, Friends feels like it was like kind of the typical 90s white heterosexual comedy. And I think because I watch reruns on Comedy Central, which annoyingly they play like the same episodes like about two or three times in the day. Shows you what I do in my daytime. But yeah, it's very heterosexual. It's very homophobic at times. You notice this, the jokes, the butt of the jokes are always about gay people, or if there's, they bring gay people in as sort of camp humor. But it's very like, there's quite a few examples where like Joey or Chandler or Ross will be in a situation and they'll like be like confronted by a gay person, or they'll be mistaken for being gay, and it's all about like, oh god, no, I'm not gay. It's that whole kind of, no, don't associate with being gay. Whereas now is obviously it's quite an offensive thing to sort of have that sort of homophobic, oh, we're gonna make the joke because he thinks he's gay, and that's really funny because, oh, we don't want to be gay. But that was the kind of, that was the attitude of
that's a that theme. That's a recurring theme in the show.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, I mean, say today we'll get criticized a lot more for it being really white, really straight, and not having any sort of different elements in there at all. But
I think on the flip side, though, they did kind of promote, you know, Ross's ex leaves him for, you know,
a woman.
And they promoted that this is okay. And, you know, they have to, Ross is in a really difficult situation because, and
Ross can't handle it.
He can't,
lesbianism is.
But isn't that reality what would happen to somebody if it happens to you? I thought that was quite real for him to behave how he was with the two ladies. And also, they really put it across that one of the girls in the relationship is a guy, kind of like, you know, plays the male role. Do you get what I mean? And he's always competing with her all the time. Even to when, you know, she's having the baby, they have to, like, who's the dad? And he ends up being the mom when she's not there. And it's such a great scene. Cause, you know, it just, I kind of felt like they were pushing it as if it was okay. Do you get what I mean?
That was kind of an interesting element to it, having that sort of, I mean, it was from the very beginning that Ross, he'd already split up from Carol, hadn't he?
Yeah, it was the first episode. We find out in the first episode.
Yeah.
The pilot. Well, it's funny, at the end of the pilot, do you remember what her message to Rachel was after everything that's going on? She says to her, "Welcome to the real world. It sucks. You're going to love it." So
yeah, exactly, because she's this, you know, spoiled brat.
Yeah.
Run away exactly. On her wedding her day.
And yeah, parents have money. And
exactly, and she's run away, and these guys are all really struggling to get on in life and do stuff. I mean, she's
insufferable, isn't she, right at the beginning, Rachel?
Oh, God, yeah, she is. And it's really cool, actually, that they show that develop, because she's never lived with these people, ever. You know, real people. If you think about it, right, it's a different world where you're this spoiled brat, always surrounded by these people. When you have, you know, with rich people, whatever. When you go into the real world, like they say, you actually find out what the hell the meaning of life is.
Mm. Yeah. And that's the good thing with Friends being 230, however many episodes. I mean, just the level of like character development. I mean, with any TV show, you've got obviously more opportunity to develop your characters than in a 2-hour film. And that's why a lot of big actors are going to TV now, because you can have that depth and that sort of intricate development of characters over a period of time. And that's what's interesting. When you watch season one of Friends, the way you see the characters develop, I mean, some of them keep a lot of their traits. I mean, Monica's neurotic. She's obviously a clean freak. And Joey's this womanizer. You know, Chandler's obviously the funny guy. And, you know, they all have their traits. But with examples like Rachel, I think her character especially just completely grows up over the seasons. I think that's really cool.
Yep, totally agree with that. And Joey, anything else about culture? I think basically, I mean, how did it impact culture around the world? I think I don't know how to explain this one. But anything in your mind about this?
I just think it was a lot of Gen Xers who saw themselves as the same exact way, and that's how it hooked on so fast, because it was so relatable. Mm. And you get through all the jokes and you get through all the funny stuff, but just put this show down to its basic core. It's a bunch of friends trying to figure it out on their own, but they have each other. You know, it's when you move out of your parents' house. Maybe you graduated college, maybe you didn't. But that's what this whole show was always about. They go through everything together. You know, they're very, I mean, we probably, all three of us probably have friends, and we're all older than the people in this show, that we still count on, that we still are there for us all the time. You need people in your life like that until the day you die. And that's what this show was about for me.
Yeah, I agree. I think they managed to, obviously, over the entirety of 10 seasons, I mean, this stuff they managed to cover, everything was in there.
It's amazing. Yeah, it really is.
You know, I don't think anything was left untouched. And a lot of it was there was overarching stories, obviously, but a lot of them were sort of confined to episodes and would address something, resolve it by the end of an episode. So you'd had that, and then you had this whole idea of them all growing up, getting closer to each other, and obviously when Chandler and Monica got together and the whole idea of settling down with families, and then there's a period where Joey wanted to settle down, he was sort of getting that kind of urge to move away from being this, singleton around New York, just basically sleeping with women, and that was all his life was. And I think, yeah, that's quite an interesting idea of the whole development and the whole how every story was different, but they managed to sort of bring them all together to sort of round these characters throughout the seasons.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting as well how they pretty much went through everything, didn't they? How many births were there in the end?
Yeah.
In this show? How many babies did they have? You didn't see any babies anywhere. At the end, it was just like, what the hell? You had a baby? Where's she gone? Like,
yeah.
She's never here.
Phoebe's wedding. Nobody in her family's there. Did you guys ever notice
that? Yeah, it's just weird.
None of them are there. It's like, twin. Ursula's not even there.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, we can't be asked to do the special effects, yeah? So let's just leave that out. It costs too much. We're already you've taken the budget, woman. You've taken the budget. So I mean, there's a really good fact that we you know nobody knows, but I mean I just stumbled upon this by looking up at IMDb and stuff. And one of the characters, Ross's child. What was his name? Ben, wasn't it?
Ben.
Yeah. Right. So I have Ben Geller here, Cole Sprouse, okay? He was in 8 episodes. Cole Sprouse was Jughead in Riverdale that just got released this year.
Here we go.
How amazing is that though? Like, as in, you know, this guy was a kid. He was just a little kid. I was watching on Friends. Now he's like,
how do you take it back to Riverdale?
No, but what I'm saying is, how old is this show? That kids from it are now making their own way in the industry, which is crazy.
Makes you feel old.
It does make me feel old. I remember how I came into watching this shows because my sister had a TV in her room and she used to watch it every Friday night. It was on every Friday night in the UK.
Channel 4.
Channel 4, because it also, there used to be Bottom on Friday as well. So there used to be, and that was on BBC 2. So luckily they didn't clash. So you could watch one and then the other. And basically, I never watched season one at all, so I had no ideas what was going on. And I only got into it for the first episode of season two. My sister forced me to watch it. She goes, "You got to watch it. You'll love it. You'll absolutely love it." I was like, "I don't think so. It must be a girly show, you know. I ain't going to get into this. Shut up." But she got me into Star Trek. She liked Next Generation, so I gave her, I love Star Trek Next Generation, so we used to watch it together. One of the things that we used to watch together, I've said this story before, by the way, on this show. So, Friends, though, she said, please, just watch one, and oh my God, I watched one episode, and I fell in love with Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah,
I think a lot of people did.
Absolutely, and you know what? They were all spruced up in season two. If you go watch season one and compare it to season two, you could tell they've become stars and that they've got new haircuts, better clothing, everything. And she looked a bit more rounded. And, she looked great, I thought.
Yeah, so, I mean, her haircut's famous. She's a Jennifer Aniston haircut. It's one of the most famous haircuts ever.
Exactly. So, basically, I just fell in love with her. I was like, wow. Okay, I'm watching this show, and then as you get on, your favorite, she's not my favorite, she's favorite to look at, but I just loved every single character, and I think this is probably a good place to start talking about the characters in this show. I mean, Jennifer, let's start with Jennifer, because obviously I've gone there now, but what were your thoughts, Mike, on Rachel? Because obviously she's... The first main storyline is hers with Ross, and when they end the show, the main storyline really is her and Ross.
Exactly. As I said before, I think she's had the most interesting character progression, and you know, she has been one of the more prominent of the six in it. I think obviously starting out on the whole potential Ross-Rachel relationship, and then when it does happen, they're like the kind of the glue of the group. And then obviously when they split up and they have however many we want to breaks, etc., it sort of impacted on the group. And then sort of coming almost full circle, and then obviously getting married drunk, and then having a kid together and getting back together, and it kind of felt like it kind of was all about her and Ross. But when you compare a character to, like, you know, Phoebe, for example, Phoebe's still great, but she didn't have as much impact and wasn't as key as Rachel was. But I just think it's her interesting character arc of being that spoiled rich girl who ran away from getting married and didn't have a clue what to do. And then she arguably became one of the most sort of independent and sort of headstrong characters in the group. Yeah, I think so. I mean, don't know whether she was my favourite character in it, but she's certainly the most interesting and most, as you say, well-rounded character there.
Joey, your thoughts on Rach?
Yeah, I kind of agree a lot with what Mike was saying. I mean, when you first see her, she's that spoiled rich kid, but she does come a long way. I mean, she probably had the most developing to do out of all the characters. Maybe her or Ross. But Ross was just so fucking irritating. I basically agree completely with what Mike said.
Yeah, I was a bit disappointed when they started putting her together with Joey.
It didn't feel right, did it?
And you know, that's why they kind of ditched it within three episodes.
Yeah.
And
the writers themselves said that was a mistake.
Yeah, I think they were getting complaints, and I think people were like, this just doesn't feel right. And also, it felt really awkward in the show as well. Like, I don't know, once you're in the show, once you're watching this show for 10 years or 9 years, you actually feel like it's real, okay? As a fan, you do go into the world, you know, like, this is real, man, on TV. I'm just watching people's lives. I know them so well. It just felt really weird how they were interacting with each other as well. So, if you think about it, Joey felt, you know, the storyline was awkward, so you could tell even the actors were awkward. Like, she's having your baby, but she's not going to be with you, she's going to be with me. And, like, just the way it played out, it just felt like, ugh, come on, man. Dude.
It just wasn't really his character, was it? It just didn't feel organic to his character over the however many seasons we've seen before. It was just such a contrast to what we knew Joey was. I mean, I think the whole idea of him being a womanizer and, you know, sort of using women for sex and just never settling down was something we got really used to, but it was also like an interesting way of him masking his loneliness, which never really came through. It was always about, oh, Joey's being a bit of a lad. He's, you know, going on a date, he's doing this, whatever. And then when it comes to it, and they're all, what, in their late 20s or even early 30s, and he's like, I want to be Rachel, I have feelings, blah, blah, blah. It was such a contrast. It just kind of just didn't feel right. And I say, as you were saying, the whole Joey-Rachel dynamic, it just felt really awkward. It didn't feel like it was meant to be in the show. So I'm not surprised they scrapped it.
Yeah. Okay. Once, if you're on Rachel, with Rachel goes Ross. So you've already said, Joey, that he annoyed the shit out of you. I really, really like Ross as a character. I think he fit the show perfectly. I get what you mean, how he would annoy you, but I think that's kind of what he's meant to do.
He was like a lovable geek, is what he was.
Yeah, I'm a geek.
A paleontologist. Oh, I'm a geek myself too, sure, but I don't think I'd ever act like him.
He's a dinosaur geek. That's totally
paleontologist. Yeah. And so it was, you know,
they really play on it, don't they, the first 3 years? Like, really play on it.
Like, how many times does he try to hit on a woman and just looks like a complete fool? They have a whole episode dedicated to it, his flirtation. It's hysterical. He was just so, I mean, he was
weird.
He was weird, and he was lovable. But at times you're just like, man, move on from her. And he could never do it. He could never, ever fully move on from Rachel. And for me as a man, I'm like, all right, come on, give it up. Like, she doesn't want to be with you right now. It's on and off relationship. But you're right, Gags. That part was written for him. So somebody knew something.
I can get it, man. You know what it is? It's like the meant-to-be story. Ross's story was the meant-to-be story, as in he fell in love with this girl when he was a kid. A young man, let's say. Not a kid. A young man. When she was a young lady. And he stuck with it the whole way. And when
he thought...
Do you know that they actually wrote two different endings, though?
No. So this is one of another random facts that you didn't tell us.
Yes. Well, this is one I wanted to save because I was hoping it would come up, and it came up perfectly. They wrote two different endings because so many people at that time when the show was ending basically were like, oh yeah, they're definitely going to end up together. It's obvious. Well, the head producer they wrote two different shows, two different endings where they weren't together. And that was on the table. That was what they were going to choose. And because fans were like, you know what? It makes more sense for them to be together. We didn't just invest 10 seasons in this. to not see a happy ending. Because remember, at that time, there really still wasn't many sad endings in shows the way there is now with Netflix and HBO mm-hmm. and things like that. But they actually did write and did the scenes. They shot it all where they didn't end up together. And I thought, a part of me thinks that, like, I love that they ended up, and I like the way they wrapped it up. I love the way they ended up together. But a part of me thinks that, you know what, this show would have been even more hard-hitting, more groundbreaking, if they didn't end up together. Mm. I always thought that.
I agree there.
Oh,
I mean,
it would have hurt, man, dude.
That's what you want, though, right?
No, not always. Not every
You kind of wanted them to get together. You always wanted them to get together and be together, but then at the same time, you also didn't, because it was too clean and too predictable. But I personally quite enjoyed the ending, and I think it generally went down well. I think it would have left people a bit more unsatisfied if they hadn't got together, but it would have been a lot more interesting, obviously.
Yeah, but this show, you've invested in it for 10 years, okay? This is you want that ending. You want it. You do. You want it. It's been on and off. There's been heartache, plenty of heartache going on throughout it. Yeah?
Yeah.
They're not together. Mm-hmm. You've got to. They have spent 10 years building up to that moment. It could have probably been done a little bit better, you know, talking about planes and messing up engines or whatever they did, I think, at the end where she got out and stuff. Is just stupid. Like, why? You know, they could have been a bit more creative. Don't mess with the plane stuff, man. Come on.
He's her lobster.
Yeah, that was great, you know? That was so good. Yeah. But I thought it was a good ending. I like that. Obviously, the baby stuff with Chandler and Monica. Anything else on Ross, Mike?
Yeah, I agree with Joey. He was sort of lovable, but also quite annoying. And just, he was quite, I think we look back on his behaviour now with how he was pining over Rachel, and just, I don't know, there's quite a few instances where he was just quite odd. Like, I'm sure you remember the Unagi episode, which is season 6, episode 17, which I have to hand here. I saw it the other day. And it was just Ross being very, very creepy, because he would be hiding in apartments to try and scare them. And it kind of felt innocent at the time. But then looking back on it, it's like, this is kind of weird behavior. It really kind of stalkery and a bit kind of abnormal, because he goes to the self-defense class and tries to, like, I know that's the whole idea of it. It's for him to look like he's a stalker and he's trying to, like, attack women, which again has a different sort of context now. When you're making jokes about attacking women, it's potentially a lot more sort of real and raw and more offensive nowadays. It's not just like back in the 90s where it's like you could joke about it, or early 2000s rather, where you could joke about it, and it's like, no, really, you know, it does that. It's like, well, it does actually happen, and there's a lot of sort of cultural awareness now of how sort of women are treated by men. I just think, it just makes him look bad in those scenarios. But I mean, generally, I do think he's one of the funnier characters at times. I just remember him standing in front of his apartment. It might be like season 5, in front of his window, doing like, pretending to get attacked by a shark and doing all this like weird stuff. I just kind of really stuck with me. The little kind of funny moments he had, because there was quite a lot of funny times on his part, to be fair. Give him credit where it's due. He did make me laugh.
Yeah, I thought he was really good. I really enjoyed it. I mean, one of my favourite scenes of his is when he's sitting with Chandler in Central Perk. And basically, they're talking about, you know, girls tell each other everything. Everything. Like, you know, we should talk, bro. We should talk. We should tell each other stuff. And he goes, me first, you know, how Chandler's like the idiot. And he goes, and you know, when you're doing it, and then your mom pops in your head, and you're like, Mom, get out. and like the facial expression on David Schwimmer is fucking amazing. So brilliant. And then the line that he says, I still use it to this day. I said share, not scare. And like, oh my God, I am in hysterics. And like, to this day, I still use that when if I'm talking to someone and they're sharing a story, I'm like, dude, man, I said fucking share, not scare. You know, I still use it because it was one of the funniest ones. And it's just like, yeah, that thing does happen to guys, but not in that way, dude. You know? Like, yeah, we get it. And like, that type of stuff, the guy stuff was great because I really enjoyed that aspect because some of the stuff was real, right? And like, they brought mm-hmm. that to the fore. They weren't scared of bringing it up. Like, also the Star Wars and, you know, Princess Leia stuff. You know, all that stuff was I mean, I'm a geek.
She was, like, so sexy. In that.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I'm a geek and we all are. But that type of stuff was brilliant. They tried to mingle so many things with it, guy stuff. And I'm sure there was girl stuff for the girls as well. But the guy stuff, it was just great when they did that type of thing. Joey was out of there. I couldn't resonate with Joey at all because, you know, and you know what? Let's move to Joey maybe if you're all right with that. Yeah, guys?
Yeah.
Because I couldn't resonate with Joey. I loved Joey. He was probably the funniest one out of the lads. Actually, it was very hard to determine who's the funniest, but he just made you laugh all the time with his stupidity. But I couldn't resonate with him because I'm not a womanizer. So, you know, I could never wish to be one, you know. He's way on a different level to me, but, you know, how you doing? You know, the pickup lines, just where...
How you doing?
You know, it's just brilliant. And, like, yeah. The different names. And, like, there's one scene, and I just want to do one scene, and then you guys can do it, and then I'll come to Mike first. And Rachel's telling this story of her friend who's, like, gone out with Ken Adams and stuff, and, you know, she's got this. And then he's, like, pointing to himself. Me!
Ken Adams!
I'm Ken Adams! It's me! And I'm like... Oh my God, because he never tells his real name to anyone. And it happens a few times more than a few times in the show where, you know, one of the girls is talking about a friend or someone they know and they've gone out with someone and it's something stupid or something amazing and it's always him. It's always him.
He's always behind it.
It's just brilliant. Sorry, go on, Mike. That was one of my favorite moments with him, but.
No, I mean. Obviously, besides the womanizing and the whole sex thing, that, you know, again, like, you know, I was in a similar boat, not a womanizer, and couldn't really relate to the whole him just basically getting so much sex, really. But he was like a massive
badly, right?
He did well, yeah. I mean, the weird thing is when you're sort of an like early mid teen. You could look at Joey and kind of weirdly be kind of like you'd sort of admire him. You'd almost be like inspired until you obviously realise that obviously that's not how you treat women. And he has been like a dirtbag to a lot of women and used them and whatnot. But his other big trait was obviously food. He was like a massive foodie. I think that was like the more interesting, that was the more comical aspect of him, because the stuff he'd do with food and how he'd revolve his life around pizza and, well, generally any kind of food, especially during Thanksgiving episodes.
Amazing.
I was impressed how much he could eat. It was great, especially that there's an episode where the fridge breaks and he's trying to get people to buy him a new fridge. But when it breaks, he has to basically eat everything in the fridge. And it's just like, that kind of typifies what Joey was, because he was just dumb, but lovable, but really kind of funny with it. And he just, do this kind of, just crazy things with food. I eat all the fridge content no matter what it was or how long I've been there.
How stupid he was. I don't know if you remember this scene, and while you were talking, this just popped into my head. But I think Chandler either hides something of his or steals it and uses it, and then he goes and is wearing the whole of Chandler's wardrobe and walks in and goes, "You headmaster, I'm wearing everything you own, buddy boy." And he's just like, and I've got
he just waddles in with it all on for me.
And I'm going, and I've got no underpants on, and I'm like, And then Chandler makes this like, ugh! And I'm like, Chandler, does it matter? It's only going to be the thing at the bottom layer. Everything else is going to be fine, dude. Like, what the fuck is your problem? Why is it so bad? It's so funny, though. He's just,
yeah.
I mean, Joey, what are your thoughts on Joey?
See, he was the one that I most
resonated with.
Resonated with the big time. Because that's exactly how I was growing up.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I was exactly how I was. So he was always my favorite character. Just hysterical. He had so many funny episodes. Do you remember the one with the ball in season 5?
Oh, yeah.
Where they were just playing, like they were throwing the ball around. And then he ended up, what did he end up calling Chandler the dropper and Monica the fun sponge? stuff like that made me just hysterical laugh. But yeah, he was, and the one where he, I think he lost the wedding ring or thought he lost it. And then blamed it on the stripper. Remember when he,
yeah.
You guys remember that?
Oh, from season didn't they? Yeah.
Yeah, that was the funniest stuff for me. Yeah, so, yeah, no, he's the one I resonated with most for sure.
And people just walking in on each other in bathrooms and stuff were hilarious. But, okay, let's move on to the, whilst we're here, we might as well cover the boys off now. Chandler, who, probably my favorite character, I have to say. I really like the sarcasm, aspect of Chandler and the way he used to say, is it really going to be like, you know, really? You know, I actually do that a lot. So,
yeah, so, actually,
so pardon?
I do the same thing. Sarcasm's like the second nature to me.
It's such a.
I think he was the funniest character.
Yeah.
Best material because his character was, as you say, based around being sarcastic. That was his trait. And therefore, he had to have witty lines, one-liners, just really good retorts and actual funny stuff. Whereas, you know, stuff that, you know, other characters would say, I've like Joey, it'd be more sort of situational potentially to what he's doing, whether he's, you know, womanizing or eating. Where Chandler would, he tend to have sort of his kind of life and parts of his personality a bit more bland. So he obviously used his humor to sort of get people to like him, it was an acknowledged thing between the group that he used humor to get people to like him. And I think that made him the more interesting and definitely the most funniest character there.
Okay, I've got one question on Chandler. Do you actually know what he did for a living?
He worked in an office in, I know he definitely moved to Tulsa to work. Didn't he move to Tulsa? But
no one knows, Joey, what did he do?
He was I do know what he was a IT procurement manager.
Right.
One of the jokes,
up on Wikipedia.
One of the jokes on the show was always no one knew what the fuck he did.
Yeah. And he would always talk about going to work, and then Joey would crash his office.
Yeah, always.
all the time.
So what are your thoughts on Chandler, Joey?
I thought he was the funniest too. He wasn't my favorite. He was my second favorite. But he was easily the funniest. Like, sarcasm, I'm a big sarcastic person sometimes to the point where people are like, wait, what did you just say? So, but no, he was hysterical. I mean, every episode he was funny, but that, you know, that was his thing. It was, you know, the characters grew, but that was Chandler's thing. That's what that character was written for. And he nailed it.
But he was smart too. He wasn't stupid. He was the clever one, the one with the one line. Like you said, the one line is he would come up with something funny all the time. But he'd also be sometimes quite sensible as well. Out of the two, you know, living together, Joey and him, he would be the one that's usually sensible. But he's also the emotional, the vulnerable one.
Yeah. He paid all the bills, didn't he? Really? He basically funded Joey's lifestyle.
Yeah, until Joey.
I don't know how much money he was earning, but
pretty much.
Yeah, his facial expressions were comical at times. Like he didn't even have to say anything; you would just laugh at him.
And he's always doing something funny. And he had a really weird girlfriend Janice.
Janice, oh my god,
just so good, so good.
Yeah.
But yeah, my favorite character. We could be here forever, and we haven't got that much time. So let's quickly move on to who Chandler went on to marry in the end, which was, you know, kind of a twist, really, in the show. at the time. Monica, again, massive part of the show, one of the main characters, the bossy one, the chef. She had a clear, you know, character, didn't she, Joey? She had proper, it was always the same. Not the insane one. She was bossy and she was...
She's a bit of a control freak, really. Exactly. She was very controlling.
That was the word.
Very controlling.
OCD.
That was the other word. I was just going to say that. Massive. And then, you know, remember when they started getting, her and Chandler started, you know, being a thing, they hid that for a long time. And I think it was Phoebe that first found out about it, if I remember
correctly.
It was great.
It was a great part of the show, to be honest.
Yeah, that was
good. Yeah, it was great TV, but, you know, they just seemed like such, she would be a tough person to date or be with just because of all those little intricacies that she had and, you know, quirks, if you want to call them. That was tough. But yeah, no, she played the character really well. I mean, that's what she was. She stuck with it and didn't change much through the whole 10 seasons.
No, Fat Monica was the best.
Fat Monica was
just hysterical. So good.
And that's the stuff we were talking about earlier that probably you couldn't get away with now because of everybody gets offended by everything. But that was hysterical. I mean, all the makeup they had on her.
And the one line Chandler goes, she goes, the camera adds 10 pounds. How many cameras are actually on you? You know, just like if everyone uses that line, the 10 pound camera line, everyone, you know, how many cameras are on you? It's just so good. So well written as well, to be honest. Let's say what it is. The writers were fantastic. You know, the comedy, everything was on point. Very rarely did you think, yeah, that failed. That joke failed, dude. No, pretty much everyone hit the nail. And then Monica-wise, she was great. She was a superstar as well in the end as well. One of the ones that went on to do movies and obviously another show. But what else? Mike, anything on Monica?
Well, I think, like, what's interesting is with Monica and Chandler, and up until the point in London where they got together, I don't know what you guys thought, like, I could never see them getting together. It didn't seem a plausible idea. And then as soon as they did, the whole secrecy thing, which lasted what felt like about a season, it might have lasted that long, I don't know, but they lasted a long time keeping it all under wraps. Then when they actually were together and it was out in the open and it was like, oh, this is actually a really serious relationship. This is actually, it works. It just felt really natural as well. So I really like how it went from being implausible. Because there are a few throwaway lines in earlier seasons of, I can't remember exactly what they are, but to the effect of like, oh, you know, if you're not married by the time you're 30, let's get married. And, you know, that kind of thing.
They were setting it up, putting it into people's minds. But what I liked about these two was, The reveal for Ross when he's in his apartment across from them and he's having problems with anger management with his boss or colleagues because they're eating his sandwiches at work and he's on suspension because he gets angry. And then he gets let off and the boss comes to his apartment and he turns around and basically Chandler's snogging her. Everyone knows apart from him and he goes, what are you doing to my sister? And like, you know, he goes fucking nuts. But it's such a great
reveal. That was a good moment.
Good reveal. The other one, one of the most touching moments in the show, was when he finally does pop the question to her, and there's candles everywhere, and like, they built it really well, and it looked like it wasn't going to happen, and in the end, she asks him.
Yeah, she does it, doesn't she?
And it was a really nice moment in the show. So those are some of the things that they actually got it to work. You know, they got a relationship to work, stick together, but then they had their ups and downs in the relationship in terms of babies, this and that. Do you get what I mean? It was, and the marriage part of it, you know, all those things, natural things that happen with couples.
Well, so I think that made Chandler's character even more interesting because he was always like the one absolutely terrified of commitment. He was awful with women. Yeah.
Always.
And generally, even when he was with Monica, he was panicking at times about committing, settling down, having kids, and the rest of it, which they kind of made a joke about. But then it was really cool the way he is then matured within a very short space of time of meeting Monica. and then was the one who was really up for settling, have kids, marriage, home in the suburbs or the wherever they were wanted to get a little family house with a dog. And yeah, I think that was really interesting because he was quite a broken character, Chandler. I mean, it kind of it kept referring a lot to his childhood and how he was mentally scarred by his parents' behaviour and all that kind of stuff. And obviously had an effect on him growing up from when he was an adult and his relationships with women and dating and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, it was really, really good the way his character kind of matured in the same similar sort of way that Rachel's did. But I think his was probably a more difficult journey because, as I say, he was so sort of damaged from his childhood and then growing up.
One of the other, that was really well put, by the way, one of the other parts that I liked about Chandler was the boss, when the boss keeps smacking people's asses. I thought that was another really funny episode. He's like, why did you keep hitting me on the ass? And then he's like, you want it, don't you? And he's like, yeah. And then he gets one. anything else, Joey, to add, or should we go to Phoebe, mate?
No, we can go to Phoebe.
Go on, then you go. You start with it. Because Phoebe was, I think, throughout the whole show, the most difficult character to play, I think. She had to play it. She had to act to play that. And she did it amazingly well.
Yeah, she really did. And I always thought she was the glue that held everybody together because she's like the ditzy blonde. But like you said, she played it perfectly. I mean, she may not be everybody's favorite, but she's kind of the in-between. Like, you don't hate her, but you might not love her, but you understand why she's there. I mean, I don't have a ton to say on her. And some of her stuff was funny. She was a huge part of the cast. It's not like she was like a throwaway. Like, the smelly cat was hysterical when I first heard that.
Paul Rudd.
She does, which was pretty cool. Well, she had a lot of different, they had to write her, they had to write her pregnancy into Friends, you know? Like, that was part of the whole series. Like, that wasn't supposed to be, but she got pregnant and they had to write that in.
Yeah.
So, which is funny because they didn't do that with Monica, with Courtney Cox.
No.
So I never knew why they didn't do that. But yeah, I mean, I liked her. I thought when she played like surrogate mom, that was kind of cool for her brother, who was actually Giovanni Ribisi, who was awesome in that, I thought.
He's so good. He acts well, like, you know.
I did like that thread.
It's very
He's actually reoccurs for quite a while, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. Yeah, he's very versatile. I don't know how much I like the twin sister thing.
It was funny.
I know a lot of people.
It was funny. I'm glad it wasn't a major thing,
That's the key to it. Yeah.
It was really random, wasn't it? It was very randomly
cropping up. Yeah. I mean, I think Sean Penn, who was Eric, played her fiance. She was just kind of all over the place, but one of the funniest things that I thought of her character is when Ursula did porn under Phoebe Buffay. That was so
Buffay the vampire. Buffay the vampire layer.
Liar. Inspector so Gadget and Sex Toy Story 2. Yeah. That shit cracked me up. So she was very funny, but it was like sometimes she was just over the top, like annoying, kind of like how Ross was to me. Like, I liked Ross's character, but majority of the time he just annoyed me.
Yeah, I mean, there was so many. I mean, this is a really good point to put some of the stars that were in this that reoccurring roles. I mean, Jon Favreau went on to do big things, as we know, with Marvel and stuff, and other stuff as well that he's done. He's done so much, but he was in this, and he was a UFC. He was a rich guy who wanted to fight in the UFC back when it was illegal.
So, he was trying to date Monica, wasn't he? He was trying to win Monica's affection with his wealth.
He did, yeah, and he dated her in the end, didn't it? So it was really cool. I mean, just looking at some of these episodes, Gunther, we haven't even mentioned Gunther, right? 159 episodes. The only people that were in more shows than him, I mean, no roles, he was only in for seconds, but the only people in more episodes than him were the actual six. And then Jack Geller, the dad, 21.
Yes.
Judy Geller, 20. Christina Pickles. Maggie Wheeler, Janice, 19. Paul Rudd, then with 18. Carol, Willick 15, and then
Paul Rudd was in a lot, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was the last two seasons.
He ended up Mariner, so yeah, he ended up in Brad Pitt, Bruce Willis,
Emily Walton 14. So this is all the guy. These are all the Tom Selleck. Remember?
Yeah. Monica loved him.
Yeah, it was amazing. You know, so there was, and then you said obviously like it goes down into the ones that were only in there for one or two. But Bruce Willis was one of the big ones. I think Brad Pitt was in it once.
Yeah, wasn't Reese Witherspoon in it as well?
She was in it.
Christine Applegate, they were Rachel's sisters, weren't they?
Yep, she was.
Elle McPherson, she was Joey's roommate, which was quite a good role because that kind of shocked Joey because it was the woman he basically couldn't get. It kind of destroyed his mojo, thinking he could shut up any woman, and she was just completely immune to it. Which was quite an interesting, but short-lived.
Reese Witherspoon too. Yeah, Reese Witherspoon was in it.
Ben Stiller was Rachel's boyfriend for a bit.
Yeah,
the shouting one.
Remember the one with Winona Ryder with the big kiss?
Oh my Rachel? God, there was
that
loads.
Was hysterical.
There's so many. You know what? You could go through the list. I'm scrolling down IMDb, and the list just doesn't.
Alec Baldwin. Yeah.
Oh my God, the list doesn't. So many. The list does not end, guys. We could be here all night talking about special guests. It was such a popular show that everybody wanted to be on it. So let me ask you, before we've only got 5 or 6 minutes left here, does it hold up today? I think so. I can watch it now and enjoy it, but obviously just apart from some of the jokes that won't hold up for other people, but for myself, just looking back when I watch it, I still love it. Joey?
Yeah, same here. I actually still watch it. Like you said, it's syndicated. It's basically everywhere. I still think it holds up, which says a lot for a show from 1994, because all those other shows I watched when I was a kid, I probably would never watch anymore. But Friends, I could watch anytime, any part of the day. Some part of that show will make me laugh, and that goes a long way with me.
Mike, same question to you.
I agree. As I said, there were sort of political correctness issues to do with the style of comedy, the jokes, but I will happily sit down and watch it, and I think it's the quality of the writing in general, the quality of the comedy still resonates today. You can still get some really good laughs out of virtually any episode you watch. So yeah, it's still very, very watchable today, I think.
Just a couple left before I let you both go. So would you want a Friends reunion, Mike?
Well, it's 13 years since it ended. I don't know if it's just they've been left a bit too long now. I mean, there's always been talk about it. You know, it's always cropped up and there's been rumours about it. And I think, I don't know, 13 years for me, I just think it's maybe just a bit too, it's just missed the boat, I think, a little bit. Personally, I wouldn't be too bothered about it now because I've kind of disconnected from Friends, having not seen it for so many years, and then it coming back on Comedy Central and watching that sporadically, I've kind of moved on from that. You know, you've gone through other things like Lost, Game of Thrones, Stranger Things, Westworld. You've kind of, in my opinion, I've moved away from that.
Leftovers, Joey, what would you think of a Friends reunion?
I completely agree with what Mike said. I love the show. I have no interest in reunions. I don't want to see them back together. It's been talked about many, many times. It doesn't need to happen.
It would be a shame as well if it happened and it just wasn't very good. Yeah, that's the danger you always have. Yeah, exactly. Tainting.
It's impossible to probably get the production exactly the same quality again. These type of things happen, or like Joey said earlier, sometimes by accident. You know, sometimes you fall into things, and I don't think any of them expected this to be making $1 billion a year after they finish. You know, Warner Brothers didn't expect it. I don't think anybody expected it to do what it did. So when you have something like, why even go and spoil it? It'd be nice maybe to get, I don't know, a movie out of it or something. I don't know. It's something that's just a one-off. Would be interesting maybe to see how they're doing when they're older with kids or whatever, how they behave with kids. You know, I don't know. Something that is not a something that you have to watch 24 episodes of, you know? Just if you really want to make some money. But this is the thing. I think if it wasn't as big as it was, or is, right? You know, to say is, because it is making money. Then I reckon they would have done something. But because they're all content, they know that this is going to make them money for years and years and years. They don't have to touch anything. They're all like, well, what's the need?
It's perfect. Well, none of them need it either.
No, they don't need it.
I think some of them would feel a bit precious about, we've done 10 seasons, we wouldn't want to potentially ruin it by doing any more. Or, you know, worse than they could do is make another season. I mean, because you're probably not going to have all the same writers back. 20 or more years since it started. Where are these people now? Even since finishing 13 years ago, who's still around? Still in the business? Who's still alive in that whole production of what made Friends such a great machine?
And I think they tried something. They tried the Joey spin-off, which didn't work. They tried to do something, didn't they? So that was kind of the test, you know. What can we do if Joey works? We could probably split them all up and do something. Maybe if they wanted to. Yeah, I don't think any of them wanted. They want to go become movie stars, right? But Joey, it just didn't work, and it was canned.
In theory, it worked. Obviously, it worked on in theory. But like, okay, we've taken a really funny character, put him in his own focus, but no, you need the dynamics of the whole group.
Yeah, I was loyal to it just because of Friends. So I watched it just because of Friends, but I don't think everybody did. Anyway,
I watched the first few and it just didn't.
I watched the whole season. Hit. I watched the whole season and a half, or two seasons was it? I think I watched the whole
Dedication.
Yeah, I did because of Joey, you know. But Joey, what is the legacy of Friends? This is the last one.
I think the legacy of Friends is basically what you're seeing in any kind of sitcom right now. It laid the groundwork for people to basically do whatever they wanted. You know, let's remember this. There was nothing before this, and there really hasn't been anything after. And they have tried to sort of replicate it. There are a few shows like Community and It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, which are sort of like it. But like, I take a show like How I Met Your Mother. Like, How I Met Your Mother is a good show, but it pales in comparison. They just basically tried to replicate Friends in How I Met Your Mother.
Yeah, they did.
And it just never came off the same way. I mean, it was a decent show, but not even remotely close to what Friends was. It might be the greatest show ever. You could make a really good case for Friends being the greatest show ever. And you can get debate on it. There was always going to be shows being made. There's great shows out right now, and TV's probably at this moment is at the height of peak of its powers, I would say. But you could make a strong case for Friends being the greatest show ever. So that's kind of its legacy, where as far as I can see.
Yeah, if we still had a Hall of Fame, on the Box Hall of Fame that Neil and Simon started, this was going to go straight in, definitely.
No question.
But we don't have it, because it was kind of poor. Anyway, Mike, legacy for you?
I mean, I think it says a lot when we can, 13 years after it's ended, 23 years after it begun, after it began, sorry, that we can still, off the top of our head, memorize, think about the characters, discuss and remember so many specific quotes, lines, scenarios, and, you know, episodes, you know, that are really, really memorable and sort of really iconic in culture. And I think it's a shame that sort of the younger generation today probably won't experience anything like we did growing up with Friends. So I think that's a sort of testament to it, that you can think back and you can pick any character and you can reel off half a dozen scenarios of really funny, really memorable stuff that they did.
Yep, so if you haven't watched this show and you've listened to this because you're loyal, because some of you are amazing listeners, honestly, you've got 10 seasons of content there to go and watch and have a lot of fun with. We haven't spoiled much at all. There's too much. There's stuff we haven't talked about. Honestly, you can go and watch this and you will love it. And I just think like, I think both of the guys nailed it there, the legacies wise. What's come afterwards, how we are reacting to it when we're talking about it now. I just think it's one of the best shows ever made, for sure. And really, really funny. And makes you feel good. That's one of the things. If you want something to, you know, feel good, especially in times that we are right now, this show will make you feel good, and you'll have a smile on your face after you watch it. So if you need something for content, this is available. Go and watch it. The box sets are around, and I'm sure you can pick up one for cheap. So I just want to say a massive thank you to Joey and Mike. Guys, any plugs for what you're doing at the moment, Mike?
I am doing various bits for Metro, Yahoo TV, and a few other things, but you can basically see it all on my Twitter, which is at Mike_P_Williams, if you want to go and check out what I'm up to.
And Gott is back soon, which he'll probably be writing about every week. Joey, any plugs? AI Legends?
Yeah, Legends, I just released one a couple of days ago with Dave Hendrick and Fizzy, as you guys know him on Twitter, but Jan Gorski Mercier. We did Kenny Dalglish. I have recording one tomorrow and possibly even Saturday. Then I'll take a little break from that because summer's around. But I did some articles for AI Comic Pod. I have a lot of those out there, and three were submitted. But
they need to get
I know
edited.
They're. They yeah, there's they're edited. Long. They're long, and you know, that's how I write when I write about comics. It's my
I
own
need to
fault,
get someone to edit them.
Yeah, no, they're long, man. I don't blame you. So they'll be out too. But other than that, no, I'll be around. I'll be doing soccer pods. I'll be doing football pods.
No, and just it's fine. Soccer is fine.
Different stuff for AI.
Yeah, we call it what you call it at the end of the day. Yes, yeah, so for my part, go and check out the fixture pod that we've done. Myself and Chris Williams analysed the fixtures, put our own stint on it, opinions on it, but also used a lot of the analysis that Dan Kenny used on LFC TV that he said he did himself. So really good stuff in there to go and listen to, because Dan is fantastic. Other things, go and listen to Audible. There should be some more videos coming soon. Plenty, plenty going on in AI. Just check out the feed. I'm at Gags Tandon, at On The Box as well, the On The Box podcast. And we will be bringing you many more of these soon, I'm sure. I'm sure Leftovers is going to be one of them very soon with me and Joey at some point.
Leftovers, Lost.
Oh, and Lost. Lost has got Lost with both of these lads, so we'll bring that back.
It deserves
back
the respect, though, so it's going to take some time.
It's going to take some time, that one. We're going to have to watch some of it. I need to find recaps, really. I can't watch the whole six seasons or whatever it was, so I need to find
recaps. No, that's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
And they're not half-an-hour shows. They're an hour show, long shows, but yeah. Mm-hmm. But let's finish with This Was Friends. And did you really think we weren't going to cover this show?
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.